Okay, this morning I want to explore another way of working with dukkha in meditation. Yeah. So, I mean, what we're always trying to do is we're trying, in any practice we're trying to do, we're always trying to see through this belief in a really existing self and a really existing fixed world. We're always trying to do that. We're always trying to thin self. So every time we're generous, every time we forgive, every time we confess, every time we're genuinely kind, every time we're genuinely thoughtful, every time we enter into deeper states of meditation and mindfulness, you're always fabricating less self. Even when you get absorbed in a work of literature that's taking your interest very deeply, there's just less of you there, less impacted, less fixed, less thick. Yeah. So we're always trying to do that. Every genuinely Buddhist action is doing that. That's why generosity, I think, is so important. In the moment that you're generous, you're fabricating less self. You're going beyond yourself. So what we're doing is just exploring some meditative ways of doing that. But we shouldn't get that. We shouldn't sort of think that that's the only way of doing that. We're always working from the ground up of ethics and from wisdom perspective down. And I think that needs to be probably going on all the time. So what we're trying to work on, particularly in the dukkha meditations, is to do with clinging. So the cause of our dukkha, as we all know, as we've learnt in our foundation courses in Buddhism, and thought was wonderful, the cause of our dukkha is clinging. That's what the Buddha taught. And it's interesting that you can it's really clinging and aversion. But as we've already said, you could just think of aversion as clinging. What happens as soon as you feel aversive to something, whether it's a pain in your back, a person in your life, something you're saying to yourself in your mind, as soon as you're feel aversion to something, you stick to it. The experience is actually that you cling. The more you hate someone, the more preoccupied you are by them. The more you hate yourself, the more preoccupied you are by yourself. As soon as you are averse to something, your mind clings to it. So we're always trying to work with that issue of clinging. Yeah. So in this meditation, you remember, again, that the cause of dukkha, the cause of all of our dukkha, is not to do with reality. It's not saying that reality is dukkha. It's that we cling to things. And in that clinging also includes aversion. Yeah. And we cling at every level, from a very obvious, gross level. If you've got a date at the end of this retreat, lucky you. In a way, unlucky you, because it'll just make you more and more kind of clinging to that hoped-for moment. If you've got some lovely thing that you've already organised to happen at the end, you're just causing yourself suffering. Of course, I wouldn't do that. Fat chance. Anyway, you just sort of cling, yeah. So subtle clinging goes at every level, from that sort of very obvious gross level of clinging to the subtlest possible clinging that's involved in perception itself. So I was sitting in my garden room. Sounds like a very palatial room. I'm in the garden room of this sort of marvellous mansion, and looking out of the window, and even that looking out of the window involves some subtle clinging, me looking out of the window, as looking at the tree against the sky, and even that tree against the sky is grasping onto particular aspects of it. But you can't really, very, very difficult to get a sense that any clinging is involved. You just think you open your eyes and there you are, you see the world. But actually you're always selecting. And when you select, you're saying you're clinging to one thing and not wanting to notice another thing so much. When you look around a room, you pick up on certain people and not on others. You're clinging to certain people and not to others. If you've ever tried to give a talk when somebody doesn't like you, which I have done, unfortunately, numerous occasions, you can tell, you know. It's very, very difficult not to end up giving the whole talk to them. You just sort of keep on being drawn back to the person who's... I remember giving a talk with Don Moratti, who has this tendency when he listens to talk to look as if, you know, like as if you're talking absolute rubbish. This sort of very quizzical, utterly confused face. And I remember this one talk. I eventually just tried to persuade him through the whole talk, and I said, "Didn't you like that?" He said, "No, I was quite interested." But you know, his face seems to fall into this quizzical, "What on earth are you talking about?" expression. So, you know, in those sort of situations, sort of, you end up clinging to the one person. Or when you're giving a talk, you cling to the person you fancy. You can keep every point, you end up looking at the attractive persons in the room, trying to particularly convince them of the Dharma. Probably you've never done that, and never will do that, but just we can imagine that, at least. So every layer of experience is clinging, really. We don't know what the world is. We don't know what we are. We don't know what today is without clinging. Something is going on, something miraculous, mysterious, that the Buddhas are all the figures around the room are trying to evoke. But we cling to our day instead. Yeah? And we cling at every level. And remember that clinging means clinging aversion. It's the same thing. So how do we know? The first thing we need to do in this meditation, therefore, is how do we notice that clinging is present? It's so much, I mean, it's not something we have, it's something we are. It's so much our everyday experience that we don't really notice it's present. We can notice if it's very obviously present, but usually, often we don't really notice. In fact, it's probably easier to notice subtle aversion than it is to notice subtle craving, subtle clinging. So obviously you notice that clinging is present if you're preoccupied with something. As soon as you're preoccupied with something in your mind, that means you're clinging to it. You notice clinging is present when you want to get rid of something. You're thinking about something that's trying to get rid of something or trying to attach yourself to something. So one of the ways of knowing clinging is present is by noticing your thoughts. That you're trying to get rid of something, you're preoccupied with something. Thoughts like this are sticky. You get stuck to them. And they're often sort of self-narratives, like I noticed this morning, this narrative that I've had many, many times that, oh, my meditation was working, but now it isn't. Oh, yeah, I had this, and it was going really well, and it's not now. And that's a shame, it's just gone back to normal. And really, it's just another, for me, a habitual story. In the past, it was good, but it's not good now. One takes those stories as actually being statements of fact, whereas they're just clinging. Yeah? And without noticing, I run down that story as if that really is true. So, oh dear, I've now dropped out of meditation now. That's how I felt this morning. I thought, I thought this was going well, and now I've dropped out of it. Actually, what I noticed when I investigated it more, it's impatience. I sit down, I don't have the experience I'd like, and actually what comes next is impatience. Very easy to just be impatient, to not do the work, but want the fruits. That's what I notice in my own meditations. I want the lovely experiences that I've read about, but I don't really want to do the work to get there. It's really just impatience. Yeah. Another clear way that you can notice clinging, obviously, in your body, in a way, often that's the easiest place to notice. And with this meditation, I suggest you start with the easiest place where you can notice clinging. One of the easiest places to notice is your body, because clinging in your mind is always mirrored in a tightening of your body, even if it's very, very subtle, or a tightening of the space of your awareness. If you get very absorbed, for instance, it'll just feel like a tightening of the space of awareness, because when you get very absorbed, you don't feel the body so much. But you'll feel, if you're very sensitive, a tightening in the space of your awareness. So it might be that you really look into the body and see clinging there. Yeah. As I say, what you might notice actually is subtle aversion. And that's what you need to notice as well. Impatience is really a subtle aversion. So in the meditation, first of all, really see if you can notice clinging. And try and notice it where you notice it most. First of all, you're preoccupied with a story in your mind. You're looking forward to something in your thoughts. You're clinging in your body, you're tightening in your body. And see if you can experiment with ways of letting go of that clinging. We've already mentioned some, so just saying that it's unsatisfactory can start to help you let go of that. Like when you get into a fantasy, feel the clinging in your body and remember that that's dukkha, that's unsatisfactory, that's painful, and see if you can let that go. Or you might tune into the fact that if you look at that experience closely, it's not a thing, it's a constantly changing flux, it's inconstant, so you might tune into that. Or you might imagine yourself releasing and letting go. I remember Surya saying that one of the things he sometimes imagines is that, you know, when you've been bursting to go for a pee, and you finally do, and it's that lovely relief. Ah, I mean, I'm sorry to be so lavatorial, but it's a very graphic. See, you could just imagine that kind of relief. You can sort of breathe into areas of grasping and clinging and so on. But really trying to look into your body, into your mind, into your emotions for any clinging and grasping, and then see whether you can experiment with ways of softening that, soothing that, releasing that. You know, including grasping onto this meditation and how I want it to go, see if you can soften that. If you feel tired, see if you can notice that it is actually a sort of clinging as well. Notice any agitation. Really trying to let go of all of that grasping and clinging. And what will happen is that you work with cruder clingings at first, like physical ones, is probably a good place to start. And then more subtle clingings you'll start to try to notice. Yeah? Any kind of perception has got a clinging in it somewhere. And see if you can just let go of that, whether it's pleasant, painful or neutral. So you're again trying to include all of that. Sometimes zone in onto a particular experience, sometimes open out to the whole space of your awareness, your whole body. Notice any subtle clinging and just keep on letting go. So you might do that for a while in the meditation. And then the other way, then perhaps you move on to a second approach to it, which is that you just welcome everything in your experience. So you first of all notice any tightening, any clinging, aversion, and are trying to let go of that. Perhaps starting particularly physically. And then after doing that for a while, just have this attitude of welcoming everything. Welcoming anything that's pleasant, anything that's unpleasant, anything that's neutral. Because what we're trying to move away from is this instinctive push and pull that builds up ourself, pushing things away instinctively, subtly, without often being fully aware of it, grasping things towards ourselves instinctively, subtly, without being aware of it. So instead of doing that, which is what creates ourself and the world, just welcome everything. Be as open to everything as you can. Go right up close to experiences, physical sensations, distress, happiness, thoughts, etc., and just try and welcome them. So, again, I've been noticing resistance coming in my meditation. I think this is a time for resistance. I notice that there's more shuffling in the room, which is often a sign of resistance. You start to want to shuffle out of it. It sort of starts to creep in about now. So try to notice resistance. And either try to notice that that's tightening, or try and even welcome the feeling of resistance. Welcoming something doesn't mean approving it, of it. It doesn't mean flowing with it. You flow with things when you grasp to them. So welcoming, let's say sleepiness or a fearful thought, isn't to do with then running with that fearful thought or dropping into that sleepiness. It's feeling the direct sensations of the sleepiness or the fearfulness and letting that be there, letting that be there. When you grasp onto things is when you've run with them, when you carry on with the thought, when you carry on with the sleepiness, when you carry on with the revenge fantasy or whatever it is, when you carry on with the resistance. So you're trying to, again, get really close to really Vedna, which is the sort of building blocks of your experience, grasping onto things, pleasurable things, grasping onto painful things, and try and just let everything be there. Try to keep coming back to welcoming whatever's happening. There's a resistance there, you just welcome the feeling of that resistance. Try to get into it, try to get close to that feeling. Let it be there. Whatever it is, yeah? Try to keep having this attitude of opening. It's almost like your awareness, that you open your awareness a bit more to really allow yourself to feel something. That's perhaps might be a bit more accurate, that, you know, whatever it is, so, like my impatience this morning, try to open my awareness so I really feel what impatience feels like, rather than grasping onto impatience and running a story that isn't really a story of impatience. Try to open myself to feeling impatient and feeling what that feels like, yeah? And letting it be there. So yes, welcoming doesn't mean just running with things. That's grasping onto things. So any questions about all that before we do it?
Just wondering, if you're not clean, are you accepting that your experience a combination of the two?
Yeah, it's funny this word accepting, because it usually means, it usually has a tone of that you want it. You could call it radically accepting. I don't personally like the word for some reason very much. It's probably better just to think that you don't cling to it. Something else, a new kind of consciousness gradually arises.
So I suppose the question is, what is not clinging?
Yes, I don't know. Because it goes at deeper and deeper level. So what you're trying to do is look for where you cling. What you know that clinging does is it limits, doesn't it? As soon as you cling, you are effectively limiting experience. You're narrowing down. So that can't be the goal, to limit. I mean, presumably the end of not clinging is limitlessness, is boundlessness. What is the samadhi? I can't...
Yeah, It's the wishless, the biasless.
The biasless, the wishless, yeah.
You know, Bhante uses the image of a perfect sphere on a completely flat surface.
Mm.
You know, there's no... It can go anywhere, but it's not.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's that complete freedom, but it's poise.
Yeah, poise, yeah.
If you like.
Yeah.
But I was also thinking, when you were talking about this thing of clinging and limiting, and what you were saying earlier, that we sort of make choices, don't we? With the phrase that Trungpa used to describe, Trungpa Rinpoche used to describe the wisdom of the Dharma Dhatu, he used this expression, panoramic awareness, which I think is actually quite good.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That your awareness is not, it's not sort of homing in on one particular thing. But it's this completely panoramic. He's saying it's what the four heads on a Bodhisattva, for example, symbolises. It's really this completely open awareness without any preference.
Right. Yeah.
Which I think is quite.
Yeah, that's very good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very good. So yeah, panoramic awareness. Yeah, you thought that was wrong. Yeah, no, that's very good.
Can I just check something? It feels like, in a sense, we're going back to the Shantar Samadhi development phase.
Right, yeah.
Thinking about this, which haven't really progressed to the Vipassana aspect, because I'm still working on that really. But, yesterday, we were talking about bringing in sort of more reflective seeing as aspect of something like saying, oh well, I'm always doing this, there's another way. Are we sort of dropping that now, or is that still something like that still going on with all of the material that we're bringing in today?
Yeah, I think I can't find a way of adequately expressing this, but it's to do with taking up the view that makes it... Vipassana isn't a meditation, particular meditations, I don't think. It's an attitude to any meditation. So it's taking up the view. The dukkha is caused by clinging. Where am I clinging? That feels, in my experience, different than just thinking where is there tightness, to use that in that samadhi way. Taking up the view that dukkha is caused by clinging, it has a much greater scope, but also just taking up that view and therefore looking for where do I cling and therefore where's dukkha, changes your experience. I mean, a lot of these approaches to meditation are to do with taking up a pranya view and looking at your experience quite consciously through that view. Okay, everything is impermanent, let me see that. Where is that? How do I experience that? And this is taking up that view. Everything, all experience is dukkha. Dukkha is caused by clinging. Where is it clinging? Taking up the view changes the experience, in my experience. And I've been surprised that's been the case, because I wouldn't have thought it would, but it does in my experience anyway.
Do you think it's also connected with a spiritual rebirth? Because I find when I recognize clinging and I try to work on it, then it's easy that I cling on me who's working on the clinging.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
It's trying to solve it at the same level, which,
yes, that's
which
right.
is impossible, really.
No, that's right.
I think one way is just to surrender and...
Yes, that's right.
...and being... in a way bigger or...
Yes.
So, for me, it's the question if there's also spiritual rebirth...
Yes, that's right.
...to it.
And somehow, I mean, sometimes I think it is useful to cultivate faith first, cultivate spiritual rebirth first, and then go into one of these. Sometimes I've been doing, you know, doing my sadhana and then using this approach. So that it's in the context of faith. But yes, it's odd. It's a bit like, and this particularly becomes true in the Anatta reflections, that it's like going to see a play and realising it's a play, but then also trying to realise that you watching the play is also in the play. So this clinging reflection is also trying to realize that I'm clinging to things, but even the person, as you say, working on trying to release clinging is a clinging. You know, you're trying to realize the person watching is part of the play. It's very odd. And out of that comes a release. And you again, remember, you're looking for how it's important to notice how clinging feels, to really be convinced that clinging causes suffering. Really notice how it feels. And then notice how it feels if you release it to some degree. Even if it's a tiny degree, just really notice how that feels and when it releases a little bit. You're trying to learn it, not just tell yourself it.
Just was wondering if you could kind of clarify something around dukkha. I think yesterday kind of cleared up for me because I previously thought dukkha as being less pleasurable than enlightenment, say, or something like that. It's describing it. It's describing something as being painful.
Yeah.
So a pain in my knee is blatantly unsatisfactory.
Yeah.
Dukkha, but you know, maybe a pleasurable experience would be less.
Yes, that's right, yeah, yeah.
But actually, what you seem to be saying is that, no, those are both dukkha in the same way.
Yes, yeah.
So that kind of clears things up a little bit for me, but I'm wondering, in what sense are they
dukkha
in
yeah.
the same way?
Yes, my own thinking. I think we mix dukkha up with suffering too much, literal suffering. So people then say they've got a lot of dukkha in their life. I mean, lots of people suffer dreadfully all their life and it does nothing but grind them down. Suffering itself, literal suffering itself, is awful and doesn't help people. I think dukkha is the awareness of causing oneself suffering. But yes, even pleasant experiences are dukkha at the very least, in as much as that they're impermanent, at the absolute least, you know, that they're impermanent, so you can't grasp them, you can't have them. But also compared to this new consciousness that we're discovering, they are literally dukkha from that point of view. They're a restriction, they're a limitation, and we don't want to be restricted and limited. Right at the centre of our heart, we have a yearning to be unrestricted and unlimited, and even our pleasures. So often they're, like Canute was telling me, you know, about having all these ideas about cricket, and when you actually, even though it's a pleasurable sort of thought, when you actually look at your experience, you're really clinging. It's really quite painful. I mean, when you're wanting something, it's actually very painful. But the thought of what, because of what you're wanting is pleasurable, you mix up, we all mix up, you know, the object that the thought is pointing at, i.e. a pleasant thing going to happen at the end of this retreat or tomorrow or at lunchtime, with the experience. And the experience is painful. If you see what I mean. It's just that we mix up, we think, because I'm thinking about something pleasant, I'm having a pleasant experience. Actually, you're gripping. So if you think that consciousness at this level is all of it is unsatisfactory, it's not saying that human consciousness itself is unsatisfactory, it's just at this level. When you let go of clinging, it's not unsatisfactory. But at this level, all of it is. Yeah. And you need to be as complete and global in that understanding as possible. Otherwise, we sort of dignify suffering and make suffering look like almost a good thing. And I feel more and more uneasy about that. Some people are only too keen to have a dark night of the soul. I've had so many. I'd really rather not build it into the Dharma. Oop, okay.
I've noticed since we've been doing the more insight stuff that fear has been arising.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
Wondering if you have any particular advice on how to manage that.
Yes, I noticed that as well for myself, that more fear arising. I mean, this is again why Bhante's always taught that you do samatha first, a really good basis of samatha. You know, he's quite right in that. Our tradition is that you concentrate on integration and positive emotion up to ordination. It's at ordination that you dedicate yourself to spiritual death, spiritual rebirth, and spontaneous compassionate activity. That's what you're doing when you get ordained. So you can see the good sense of his approach. All we're wanting to do is make, actually, we need to teach all five stages right from the beginning, for all kinds of reasons. My own experience of fear, I experience a lot of fear. The main thing I notice about fear is that it kind of fills the universe very quickly. It's like a Pandora's box, isn't it? Especially it fills you with thoughts, predictions, catastrophic narratives, and so on. What I've been trying to do is just locate the actual sense of fear, the physical sense of fear. Because very often we grasp onto the narrative of fear. This is going to happen. Oh no, I'm going to, you know, hurt myself sitting in meditation, or some other fear narrative. And we just grasp the narrative and run along with it. It's actually quite difficult to feel the actual fear. It sort of swells up, doesn't it? Fear very quickly and just fills past, present and future. This happened in the past. Oh my God, I think it's happening again. My life is going to be ruined. That's what fear sort of wants to do. It sort of fills up the universe. Try and come back to the actual experience of fear and use, again, one of those, perhaps try and welcome it. But again, you're welcoming the direct feeling of it. Or you might think, actually, no, I need to go back to a samatha approach. Remember, with all of these meditations, you're constantly trying to do this thing of the mountain bike and the terrain. So depending what terrain you're in, you might need to change practice and go back to the mindfulness of breathing, or go back to the metta bhavana. Back is the wrong word, because it suggests that it's a lesser practice. You're trying to work in the most appropriate way. If there's not enough samatha there, your vipassana reflections won't get very far. These reflections, for instance, on clinging, they only really go deep if you're in a deeper place where you can notice subtle clinging. Yeah. People often need to be encouraged, really encouraged, to do both. There's always a bit of a tendency to think that vipassana is a real thing, and it really isn't. And if you think of it like that, you undermine ethics, you undermine all the other ways of practicing spiritual death, like forgiveness, apology, responsibility, confession, friendship. There's spiritual death in the whole of our practice. It's not just a meditation thing. So we have to keep on remembering that we've got a whole context. Otherwise we over-focus on meditation, which is another clinging. Then meditation becomes the thing we cling to, as the way that we'll sort out our problems. It's just another kind of clinging. So we need to keep on doing the whole thing, which is why we're living together communally, why we're making friends with each other, why we're trying to refine our minds through the arts. That's this whole kind of incredibly global vision. We need to keep on doing that, breathing out into that, breathing into meditation, breathing out into life, breathing in into meditation. Bhante's system is wonderfully balanced between those two things. Otherwise, we just cling on to meditation. At the moment, that's the fashion. You know, at one point in the future, people will be clinging on to study. I've noticed even Pali, people get clinging on to the Pali Canon as if that's almost like a Buddhist Bible. Or we'll just want to cling on to bits of Buddhism if we're not careful. Anyway, easy to say. Shall we have one more?
Sorry, I was just going to say about fear. It's partly experience, and partly experience is that when the self starts, when you get that dissolution of the self a little bit, then you do get that kickback of fear from that as well, don't you?
Yes, that's right.
So there could be sort of two types. One could be, if you like,
psychological fear.
And the other can be that kind of existential fear.
Yeah.
One's becoming non-existent in that sense.
Yes, but the fear will still get in the way. Again, I'm nervous of dignifying fear and giving it a metaphysical name. As soon as you've got fear, you're gripping on. You know what I mean? It always gets in the way. So when you've got fear, you need to find a way out of it. And that might be that you just really welcome it. So, you know, that's what I've done sometimes, is just really, really welcome it until I'm more stabilised again. And you can't quite say whether it's there or not after that. But when you're frightened, you grip. And the more frightened, the more gripping. So it might be, I tell you what, I need to cultivate metta again. I need to to take my foot off the pedal, I need to relax more. Okay, I don't actually have much to add this morning. Just going back to the questions that I'm thinking about in the tea break. Alan's question about acceptance, I think the reason why I don't want to use that language is that the connotations of acceptance tend to be psychological rather than spiritual and existential. So, and they tend to imply pain. So you don't very often talk about accepting pleasure, for instance. So that's why I think I'm not so keen. I think what you're trying to work on is letting go of any grasping, clinging to anything whatsoever. And then what arises from that is this panoramic consciousness, this new consciousness that doesn't sort of grasp anything.
Yes, when you're describing it, it's like when you're saying you've got subtler clingings. It suggests that you're becoming more and more refined, if you like, but it sort of opens up a gap. You know, what's it gone into? What's that clinging? Where's it gone? Actually, I quite like your answer. It sort of opens a big gap.
Yes. Yes, that's right, yeah. Yes, that's right, yeah. Yes, that's right. I think that it's best to think like that. Mm. Otherwise it's something else you start to get. And then I was thinking, again, about from your question, Kevin, about pleasure. And I think part of it, it's methodological again, that the issue is not just, it's not pain or pleasure, but that we can't help but try to grasp one and push away the other. And it's in that push and pull is the issue, if you know what I mean. So if you then just think it's all unsatisfactory, it's a method for softening that push and pull. And often our pains are completely intimately connected with pleasure. So I notice this when I complain about being busy. I often don't admit the bit of pleasure that I'm trying to make space for. So my busyness is doing lots of things so that I can go out to the cinema in the evening. But often when you complain about being busy, you forget you don't mention it so that you can get out to the cinema tonight and you've got lots to do in order to do that. Strangely, our so-called busyness is often to do with trying to force in bits of pleasure into that as well. So you're trying to see it's all unsatisfactory, it's all part of the same net. The pleasure and pain are sort of part of the same net. And you just try and see all of it as unsatisfactory and let go of it all. That's what I was thinking afterwards. Anyway, let's just do it again. So keep on being experimental in your approach. Keep on noticing your attitude to your own experience. Working into subtlety.